Issues Etc. regular guests Pastor Matt Harrison, Deaconess Pam Nielsen, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be speaking at the premier worship conference of 2011. Sing His Praise, His Love Declare. It's July 27th through the 29th on the campus of Concordia University, Nebraska. For more information on the worship conference, Sing His Praise, His Love Declare, visit Seward2011.org or call 402-643-2983.
Deuteronomy 15:6, "For the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised, and you will lend to many nations, but will borrow from none."
He also went to Deuteronomy. That scored for the good governor, but when you got a $14.3 trillion debt, it's kind of late for that message to have a strong impact.
Believer, non-believer, no differences. We all say. So that's my number one commitment.
The church that survives is the one that proclaims Jesus, not the pastor, not the megastar, not the latest entertainment craze, but that constantly focuses back on the cross.
Moms in Ohio love Issues Etc.
Could it be, I somehow doubt it is, but could it be that the media has suddenly decided to come to the defense of the Roman Catholic Church? You might think so if you've been following the story about presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann, her former Lutheran-leaning statements about the papacy and the Lutheran confessions, and the media's, well, apparent outrage at what they think is anti-Roman Catholic bias on her part. Is it true? Has the media turned over a new leaf now defending the Roman Catholic Church? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, the 21st of July. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Colleen Carol Campbell will be our guest here for the first few minutes of this hour. A little bit later, Dr. Charles Geeshan will join us. The church is remembering the Old Testament prophet Ezekiel, but Ezekiel cannot be rightly understood unless we understood and then understand the New Testament fulfillment of his visions, primarily found in the book of Revelation. We'll talk about the relationship between Ezekiel and the book of Revelation a little bit later on this Thursday afternoon. Colleen Carol Campbell is a regular guest. She's host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Colleen, you're a Roman Catholic. I'm a Lutheran. We obviously have theological differences on the office of the papacy, but I think we could probably agree on an unusual development in the media of late regarding Michelle Bachmann and her former beliefs. Has the media suddenly turned over a new leaf and decided to become defenders of the Roman Catholic Church?
No, I don't think so at all. And, of course, your listeners may already know the story, but Michelle Bachmann, who I think generally identifies as an evangelical, attended a Lutheran church for a couple of years, and she hasn't attended this particular church for several years, but within its doctrinal statements are quotes from Martin Luther, including an identification of the papacy with the Antichrist. Now, obviously, that's not language that's used as often today, and this is not something that she's run around quoting on stump speeches. As I said, she doesn't even belong to this particular church anymore, and she's been very, very much on the side of the life issues, defending traditional marriage, and all the rest of it that committed Christians across the denominational spectrum, regardless of how they feel about the Pope or the papacy, can agree upon. And so, in many ways, she's been a real friend to the Catholic Church. But in the mainstream media, there's been a sudden, I think, fixation upon her. They've sort of shifted from fixating on Sarah Palin to now fixating on Michelle Bachmann, combing through the doctrinal statements of her former churches to find anything that might sound incendiary or repel potential voters. And now they've kind of brought this up as evidence that she's this fire-breathing anti-Catholic bigot. She, of course, denies it, again, points to her record of Catholic support for Catholic values, and also support from Catholic voters. And the same folks, interestingly, who are trying to trump this up are usually on the side of mocking the papacy and the Catholic Church whenever it gets in the way of what they consider the important issues of the day, that is, you know, advancing gay marriage, abortion on demand, and all the rest of it. So I think it's a really cynical attempt to smear her and to smear really any Christian who holds to a firm belief on various doctrinal points. The idea is sort of, you know, it's okay to be religious if you don't define it in any particular way. And if you belong to any church, if you're someone we don't like, we're going to dig through the doctrinal statements, dig through your pastor's old statements, and try to find something to incriminate you. Of course, we did not see this attitude when Barack Obama was running in 2008. Jeremiah Wright's statements were all over the map. They were inflammatory, racist, condemning America, and that was considered off limits. We weren't to talk about what Barack Obama's pastor said. So it's a real double standard, and I think it indicates a lot more animosity toward Michelle Bachmann and her social views than concern about the integrity of the Catholic faith and the way it's being portrayed by politicians.
As someone who watches these things, I'm wondering, Colleen, do you think that whether these are overt attempts or inadvertent kind of misreporting, do you think these stories that attempt to portray Michelle Bachmann as anti-Catholic will have any traction with Catholic voters?
No, I don't. There's a, you know, there's obviously a split within the Catholic Church politically and socially on these kinds of issues. But Catholics who stand with their church on its non-negotiable moral teachings, whether it be on the sanctity of unborn human life, the sanctity of life at the end of life, that is opposition to euthanasia and assisted suicide, the definition of marriage as the union of a man and a woman, on these issues, which again, the Catholic Church has said this is not a pick and choose thing, that if you're a Catholic, you have to hold to the Church's position on these issues. So for those Catholics, and they tend to be the church-going ones, you know, they're shrugging this off. We have seen almost no response from those Catholics. There is, of course, another group of Catholics who are, you know, they like to pick and choose. They are proud of the Church when it, for instance, calls for immigration reform, but they duck under a table when someone mentions abortion. They don't vote according to the Church's delineation of non-negotiable moral principles. They vote often just according to partisan loyalty, long-standing loyalty to the Democratic Party often. For these Catholics, they already didn't like Michelle Bachmann, so I don't think this is going to change their minds either. So it didn't actually get any traction. I don't think it's going to, and I think that's much to the chagrin of some of these secularist leftist pundits who were hoping maybe they could divide the values voters vote, you know, kind of split that cohort in two, for and against Michelle Bachmann with this revelation. Michelle Bachmann will have to answer all sorts of questions about her record and her views and her experience and her qualifications. But I think this is a real red herring, and I think most Catholics see through it.
I'm struck by just the general parallel here of the media's approach to Michelle Bachmann with the media's approach to Sarah Palin 4 years ago. What similarities do you see, and how do you account for it?
Well, these are both two, you know, outspoken conservative women who have large families, who have balanced family and career in a way that we were always told feminism was championing, this sort of balance. In reality, I think their large families have actually worked to their detriment in the eyes of some secular feminists who are suspicious of any woman who has that many kids and seems to still be able to keep her head above water and have a happy career. So, you know, that has made them a target. They're attractive. As I said, they're outspoken. Again, a target. I think if these were liberal Democratic women who were outspoken in their support for abortion, you know, they'd be getting a standing ovation everywhere they go within the mainstream media. But because they are who they are and they stand against the cultural tide on these hot-button issues, they have a bullseye on their backs. And Sarah Palin had it and Michelle Bachmann had it. Again, this is not to say either one of them is qualified to be president. That's a judgment voters have to make based on their experience and qualifications. But it is to say that I think their treatment has definitely been unfair. And in fact, if anything, it's just revelatory of the biases of many within the mainstream media who just can't help foaming at the mouth when these women appear on the screen or make a comment, and they get so incensed over everything women like Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin do that it really is almost comical, and it makes you see how frightened they are of strong, outspoken, conservative women.
Is it simply, with only about a minute here, Colleen, is it simply that she and other women like her just don't fit the template that the media has for women in politics?
I think in a certain sense that is a large part of it. Maybe that's not all of it. But, you know, it's very threatening if your whole ideology says that women have to be clones of men, that their major freedom in life is the freedom to kill their unborn children and to not have children or to have very small families and limit that family size very rigorously, that the only way to get ahead in life is to put family second, to put God way behind or drop him altogether, and to jettison any sort of traditional values, then women who somehow combine all of these things, this pro-life, pro-family ethic, they live it in their private lives, they bring it to the public life, they're outspoken about it, and yet they're able to juggle political careers on top of it, it's very threatening. It doesn't fit what secular feminists told us women's liberation was all about, which they told us it was about dropping our feminine distinctiveness and becoming men. Didn't put it in that many words, but that's really been the message. These women just blow that to pieces, and I think it terrifies many left-wing pundits and, unfortunately, especially women on the left who feel like this is just collapsing my entire view of what kind of choices I had to make to get ahead. Now, I'm not saying there aren't sincere differences as well, policy, partisan differences and all the rest, but I think it's very personal, and I think that's why you see these attacks on these women are very personal in nature, because I think the threat that is felt by some of their critics is very much personal. It's about my life and the choices I made, including, I think, in some cases, the choice to abort your child. If that's a choice you've made, it's very difficult to look at a woman who made a very different choice and has become very successful and happy as a result of it. So I think the personal nature of the threat they pose accounts for the personal nature of the attacks they suffer.
Colleen Carol Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's authored the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read those columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Colleen.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
And when we come back, we'll talk about the relationship between Ezekiel, being remembered this day by the church, and its fulfillment in the book of Revelation. Dr. Charles Gieschen will be our guest.
After more than 20 years, we thought we'd bring you some fresh new ideas for Raging Rivers Water Park. Try this. Raging Rivers, home of the awesome wave pool. Not bad. Raging Rivers does have an awesome wave pool. But what about the endless river, biflume, swirl pool, treehouse harbor, itty bitty surf city, and more? How about Raging Rivers? It's closer than you think. Well, it is just a short scenic drive from anywhere in the Metro St. Louis area. What else? Raging Rivers, affordable fun in the sun. Raging Rivers, the family fun destination. Raging Rivers, a great place for teens. Raging Rivers, open daily on the Great River Road in Grafton, Illinois. You know, these are all wonderful, but they just don't capture the essence of Raging Rivers. The thrills, the relaxation, the absolute ultimate water park experience. Guess there's only one way to say it. Raging Rivers, it's cool when it's hot. For one after 3 p.m. every day with coupons on Bunny Bread Buns and select Bunny Bread products.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.